This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Over the last couple of months, the numbers have been increasing by the hundreds almost every week. So police just said they had to move in because the area was just completely clogged. There are people sleeping on the pavements in parks nearby. There's virtually no access to water, sanitation.
That's reporter Catherine Field in Paris explaining why police evacuated about 3,000 migrants from a makeshift camp. Details coming up. Also, 26 soldiers have been killed or wounded in an attack by ISIS militants in Egypt's Sinai region. And a range of issues of interest to Africa, including jobs and investment, will be discussed at the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Boko Haram has lost as much as 70% of its war equipment and fighters. That's the assessment of defense officials from the five countries involved in the joint task force fighting the militants. But the officials who gathered in Cameroon this week to discuss the war effort admit their own troops face challenges mostly involving funding. Moki Edwin Kenzeka has the story from Yaoundé.
Nigeria, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Benin contribute the 7,000 soldiers that make up the multinational joint task force battling Boko Haram. Defense officials from the five countries said this week that economic challenges caused by the global slump in commodity prices are taking a toll on the war effort. They said it has become difficult to mount attacks on Boko Haram locations as they lack the resources to keep adequate standby troops stationed at frontier bases like Mora in northern Cameroon. Cameroonian General Donatien Milingi Numa spoke on behalf of the group.
Nous ne sommes pas financés comme une force onusienne. Nous sommes une force sous-régionale.
He says they are a sub-regional force and do not have the same resources as a UN peacekeeping mission. But he says they will not relent because the Lake Chad Basin Commission member states are suffering from severe terrorism threats. He says they received contributions from the international community like the European Union and the United Kingdom and are expecting more. The Lake Chad Basin Commission created the regional force in 2015 with an anticipated budget of $700 million. But the defense officials said less than 50% of the promised money has been delivered. In June, Cameroon arrested 30 of its soldiers in the task force after they protested over salary, saying they are not being paid enough. This week, the defense ministers resolved that each country will negotiate salary agreements with their respective militaries, while the regional force will provide additional weapons to the troops. The joint task force has succeeded in retaking much of the territory Boko Haram once held in Nigeria. However, that success has brought fresh challenges, said General Ahmed Mohamed, who is in charge of training and operations at the Nigerian Defense Headquarters.
They have been degraded substantially, but because of that, they have now broken into smaller splinters and it's becoming much more difficult to harness our resources to deal with them decisively.
The defense chiefs said these factions lack coordination and have resorted to regular suicide attacks in recent months, which have caused more people to flee their homes, intensifying the regional humanitarian crisis. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
It was a violent day in the Sinai in Egypt. The military reports 26 soldiers have been killed or wounded in an attack by ISIS militants. The attack was launched on a checkpoint in the city of Rafah in North Sinai, on the border with the Gaza Strip. The military claims to have killed at least 40 of the attackers. Militants launch frequent attacks against soldiers and police in the Sinai, killing hundreds over the past several years. Also, the Associated Press reports three Egyptian civilian construction workers were reportedly killed this week when military aircraft mistakenly targeted their vehicle. The military has not yet commented on the incident, which reportedly occurred in the Western Desert. In late 2015, the military was blamed in the death of 12 civilians when their tourist convoy was attacked by mistake. Today, the world's top economies hold a two-day summit in Hamburg, Germany, on pressing economic and geopolitical issues. The G20 meeting will discuss a range of issues of interest to Africa, including jobs and investment. Talita Bertel-Saman-Scott is the head of the Economic Policy Program at the South Africa Institute of International Affairs in Cape Town. She spoke with reporter William Eagle about a new program supported by the G20, the Compact with Africa.
So the G20 is currently under the German presidency, and each year the presidents choose a specific topic that they want to focus on for that particular year. And Germany has chosen to focus on Africa, and specifically it has focused on Africa because of the significant migration crisis that it has been experiencing since 2014. And there's a recognition in Germany that to simply close borders will not solve the crisis. There has to be action in Africa to ensure that there's sustained economic growth and opportunities for people to stay in Africa. So there have been two initiatives that have come out of Germany this year. The one is within the context of the G20, which is the Compact with Africa, and it comes out of the German Finance Ministry, which typically leads within the G20. And the second one is the Marshall Plan for Africa, which is an unfortunate name, so I've heard some people refer to it as the Merkel Plan for Africa. And this has come out of the Development Ministry. And both these plans focus specifically on the enabling environment, the enabling business environment in African countries to ensure that they can attract sustained investment specifically into infrastructure projects. Now, the Compact with Africa has this exclusive focus, whereas the Marshall Plan also brings in aspects of peace and security and democracy and the rule of law, which is a more comprehensive approach, and it's more a traditional approach of overseas development assistance and collaboration. Whereas the Compact with Africa within the G20 context is a plan that countries have been asked to sign up to. And when they sign up to it, they commit themselves to implementing specific reform measures that will be decided upon in consultation with the IMF, the World Bank, and the African Development Bank. These measures does make one think back to the structural adjustment programs of the 1980s and the 1990s, which had detrimental effects on African countries. But as far as I know and as far as we've seen, there's nothing about privatization of healthcare or any state assets or anything like that within the compact under the G20.
How are these compacts, or how is this specific compact with Africa broadly, and the Marshall Plan, part of the larger EU effort to enhance employment in Africa? And, of course, what would be of most important to the EU, limit migration from Africa?
Absolutely. So the thinking behind all of these measures do come, I would say, from self-interest on the European Union's part. They've seen massive social disruption, negative economic impact from the flow of migrants that have come not only from Syria but also from Africa since, say, 2014. So there's been a lot of thinking around how do you ensure that people do not migrate to Europe apart from closing borders? How do you create an environment on the African continent that the people would be encouraged to stay, that there would be opportunities for them, that they can see a future for their children on the continent?
Why has South Africa not signed up for the compact?
South Africa is the only African country that forms part of the G20. So, in effect, it forms part of the thinking and sort of the donor grouping behind the compact with Africa. So, from that perspective, it wouldn't be expected to sign up to the compact. But secondly, then also South Africa is in an interesting position because it is still part of Africa, and it would benefit tremendously from an Africa that develops more rapidly, you know, just because there'll be such a huge market for South African products. But also South Africa suffers a lot from the same impacts from migration and refugees that do not head north but come south towards South Africa. So South Africa has a strong vested interest in these compacts working out. If we imagine a scenario in which South Africa would be asked to sign up to the compact and to be a beneficiary of the Marshall Plan, I think it would find it difficult. In recent years, it has changed its investment laws quite dramatically to ensure that foreign direct investment takes cognizance of South Africa's broad-based black economic empowerment policies. So it wouldn't open itself up to conditionalities from the IMF and the World Bank that would in any way limit that policy or South Africa's ability to implement that policy.
That's Talita Bertelsmann-Scott, the head of the Economic Policy Program to the South African Institute of International Affairs. She was speaking with reporter William Eagle. French police evacuated nearly 3,000 migrants from a growing makeshift camp near Paris today. The move comes just days before the government proposes new measures for asylum seekers and illegal migration. The influx of migrants and refugees has become a hot political issue, not just in France, but throughout Europe. Reporter Catherine Field is in Paris. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about today's evacuation and related issues.
Police moved in just before dawn in the northern Paris suburb where there is actually a reception center for refugees. The reason they moved in there was the reception center actually only holds places for several hundred, but migrants, asylum seekers have just been going there in the hope that somehow the doors will open there and they'll find places for them. Over the last couple of months, the numbers have been increasing by their hundreds almost every week. So police just said they had to move in because the area was just completely clogged. There are people sleeping on the pavements in parks nearby. There's virtually no access to water, sanitation. What food they get are those that are given by small local associations or by people who live in the area that have been watching these people sweltering in the summer heats there and just feel very sorry for them. This is not the first time we've seen this joke. This is the 34th operation of its type since 2015, where police have gone in and removed large numbers of refugees and migrants that are just sleeping rough in the hope that someone will take them in or the government will at least just have a look at their paperwork.
Catherine, any idea how many migrants and refugees enter France every week or so?
Well, authorities here are saying that there's about 200 arriving each week. But to be honest, I see more than that on the streets of Paris. If you just go and look at this area of northern Paris, yeah, okay, maybe there is an increase about 200 each week. But then you go slightly out of Paris and you find dozens of little shanty towns with these people just sort of covering themselves and trying to stay out of the way of authorities, just trying to get a bit of peace and quiet. You've also got, don't forget, that area in the south of France, alongside the Italian border, that's being closed for some months simply because of the new influx of migrants. So you've got people turning up there, coming over the hills and the mountains there. So to be honest, I think this figure they're coming up with of 200 a week is well low of the mark.
Now, I understand in a few days the Ministry of the Interior is going to present some new measures on asylum seekers and illegal migration. Can you tell us about that?
Proposal they're going to come up with next week has really been pushed along by the mayor of Paris. And 2 days ago, she said, look, Paris can do whatever it can to help these people, but it needs to come from the government. The government is actually at the moment in a position where it can do something because it's summer holidays here and the schools have all closed. So they do have facilities such as school gymnasiums, even classrooms that are empty that they can put these migrants into these places, go through their paperwork and at least get them off the street. So that's what we're looking at. But again, we're going to get to the same problem for the French authorities, that is that they're looking for a European solution. They're looking to their European neighbours to help out. They're not getting any help, particularly when you look at the countries in Eastern Europe, Poland, the Visegrad countries. They don't want any more migrants. They say they're full. And we're now seeing countries such as Austria taking really tougher measures to make sure that there are no new migrants. So it's a bit of a pipe dream if the French government thinks they're going to be able to get that help. They are also, don't forget, under a lot of criticism here in France because the Calais jungle, the area that we've talked about before for the last couple of years that the French government closed down last year, well, migrants have started going back to that area again, hiding out in the forests around there. The government has been trying to keep that area clean. It hasn't succeeded, and local authorities have now given in after many months and said, well, okay, we will let some of the local NGOs set up showers and perhaps drinking stations up there. So it's going to be difficult for the government because just look at the figures of how many people are arriving. We've had, what, 101,000 migrants come across the sea to Western Europe so far this year. It's a huge issue, and France just will not be able to deal with it themselves. On top of that, Joe, these are guys who have come back. A lot of the Afghanis that I talked to in the last couple of days, who were rounded up this morning, this is their second time in Europe. They'd come here a couple of years ago. They'd been sent back to Afghanistan, and they decided, well, you know, their life was in danger in Afghanistan. They couldn't live even in Kabul. So they'd actually come back to Europe, not just to get asylum, but just to be somewhere that might be on the side of a Paris street, but at least they are safe.
That's reporter Catherine Field from Paris. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. Meanwhile, at the G20 summit, leaders will consider a proposal to impose UN sanctions against those smuggling migrants to Europe. European Council President Donald Tusk says his proposal includes freezing assets and imposing travel bans. He says human smuggling is an organized crime that generated more than $1.5 billion for smugglers in Libya alone last year. Libya is the main departure point for migrants trying to reach Europe. In related news, former Italian Premier Matteo Renzi says Italy should accept only a fixed number of refugees. Currently, it receives most of those crossing the Mediterranean. Renzi says Italy should consider not paying its dues to the EU if it does not get more help to deal with the crisis. While much attention in Africa is paid to disease such as malaria and HIV/AIDS, there's another rapidly growing health threat. New research warns of the human and financial impact that diabetes and obesity will have on the continent. Diabetes causes blood sugar levels to be too high. Left untreated, it can cause blindness, kidney failure, heart attacks, and stroke. The Lancet Medical Journal says the financial cost of diabetes in Africa could double to $60 billion a year over the next 13 years. AFP reports this includes the cost of medication, hospital admissions, and loss of productivity as workers fall ill or die from the disease. Diabetes mostly has been a Western disease, but no more. The Lancet says Type 2 diabetes in Africa has followed the rise in the middle class. Who can spend more money on junk food? That's brought a sharp rise in obese people on the continent. In addition, more people have sedentary lifestyles. Currently, just 1 in 10 Africans who have diabetes receive the necessary medication, and many don't even realize they have the disease. Twenty-three past the hour, you were listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Nearly 20 NGOs have sent a joint statement to the Tanzanian government calling it to stop threatening rights groups. AFP reports Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch and others say the government should end its hostile rhetoric against those campaigning for gay rights and others helping teenage mothers get an education. Last month, Tanzanian President John Magufuli said girls who became pregnant should be barred from school. The government has threatened to deregister NGOs that are helping girls return to school after pregnancy. Magufuli also said foreigners campaigning for gay rights would be arrested and deported, even if it meant losing international aid. In the DRC, 8 soldiers have been sentenced for the deaths of civilians in Kasai province last year. 2 soldiers were sentenced to 20 years in prison, while 3 others received 15-year sentences. Others received shorter prison terms. The soldiers went on trial after a video surfaced of Congolese troops walking among the bodies of at least 20 civilians. The government is battling a local militia in Kasai. The UN and others say as many as 3,000 people have been killed in the region and more than 1 million displaced. And no more miniskirts and large earrings for female civil servants in Uganda. Male staff are now required to wear a jacket and a tie. The Ugandan government instituted a new dress code for public workers this week, and it continues to anger some people. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
Women activists in Uganda have criticized the new dress code for civil servants as a distraction from the real issues in the country. Perry Aretua is the executive director of Women's Democracy Network.
Is she saying that men do not have any type of self-control? When a girl is dressed a certain way, that doesn't mean she's calling for your attention. Let us focus on the real issues that Ugandans are grappling with: the theft of our public resources, the inefficiency in service delivery, the absenteeism in public service, the capacity needs that public service has.
The Ministry of Public Service issued the directive on decent dressing Tuesday. It prohibits female staff from wearing tight clothing, open-toed shoes and skirts, or dresses above the knees. Bright colored nail polish, hair extensions, exaggerated makeup, and chandelier earrings are also on the banned list. The directive didn't spare men either. All male officers are required to dress in neat dark trousers, but not ones that are tight-fitting. And only closed-toe black and brown shoes should be worn to the office, along with a jacket and tie. Adam Wanga is the human resource manager of the Ministry of Public Service. She defends the new measures.
People in Uganda have a perception of what a public officer should look like, and this is the image we are trying to protect and preserve. We are saying not above the knee. And for one reason, above the knee, you know what it means? It can also tantamount to sexual harassment. Because when you sit, you're exposing your thighs, which is not generally accepted. And it can distract others from work.
Rights groups say the previous 2010 public order requiring dress to be neat and practical for one's job was sufficient. Ugandans have penned opinion pieces in local media against the dress code, with one lawyer writing that rights aren't taken away overnight, they are taken away in small bits. The state-owned newspaper published photos it said were taken Wednesday of 3 civil servants, a man and 2 women, not adhering to the new dress code. VOA caught up with one public worker who declined to give her name.
Yeah, I think my bright eyes can't distract someone, so the government should not discuss about that.
The penalties for disobeying the new dress code are unclear. The directive simply said cases would be referred to the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Public Service. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Kurt Bynum, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA's Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in, you will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
VOAAfrica.com.
On voaafrica.com,
The news updates never stop. Our primary goal is to keep you informed.
VOAAfrica.com, your trusted source for news and information.